Welcome into Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Here's Taylor's pitch, and Dozier swings and hits one deep to left field. Back it goes, and gone!
From the belt, delivers, and a swing and a miss. He struck him out with a fastball.
A look back at the 2021 season, a look at the plans this offseason, and a look at the expectations heading into 2022.
Lifted deep to left center field, way back there, and that ball is gone!
Here's Royals insider Josh Vernier.
All right. Good evening. Welcome in. Coming up over the next 3 hours, Royals owner, chairman, and CEO John Sherman, two-time All-Star second baseman Whit Merrifield, team president Dayton Moore, also the first shortstop in franchise history to hit 300 in a season. Nicky Lopez is coming up in 30 minutes. I'll also talk with Royals broadcaster Ryan LaFever. And here we go, guys. Offseason is here. It's a big offseason for your boys in blue, for not just the team and the organization, but individually for those young pitchers. Preparation for spring training and that shortstop competition. The big swinging prospects like Nick Prado and MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt Jr., not to mention the questions hovering above players like Hunter Dozier and Adalberto Mondesi. We'll get to all of it. But we start tonight with the general manager of your Kansas City Royals, his first offseason in that role, J.J. Pecola. We appreciate hearing from you as always. So let me start with this. What are the keys to making this a quality offseason?
Well, first, I think we're in a really good spot with our starting pitching as far as depth is concerned. We'll have 9 guys returning who have made starts in the major leagues, which is a really good thing for the organization overall and to get through the length of the season. So we feel good about the starting pitching. We still have guys that need to settle into their roles and, you know, go through that normal transition maturation process that a major league pitcher goes through. But from a purely a depth and youth standpoint, we're really in a good spot. I think what we need to focus on is trying to beef up our bullpen and make that bullpen as good as it can possibly be. We've watched this through the playoffs this year, how difficult it is for starters to get into the 7th inning, 8th inning. That's certainly the goal, but the deeper your bullpen is, the more likely you are to secure wins when games are winnable. And that's a focus of our off-season discussions with our professional scouts, our R&D department. You know, who are those targets? Who fit us from an evaluation standpoint, from an R&D standpoint, and from an economic standpoint? You know, that's something that we always have to have an eye on. So that's a big focus for us. And I think more than anything, when it comes to pitching, we just have to be really, really focused on how we get the pitchers that we currently have better. How do we get them to the next level so they can be really, really productive pitchers for us and lead us into winning seasons and playoff years?
What excites you about the young pitching heading into next season, and where do you think the young pitching needs help heading into 22?
I think every guy has a little bit of a different story. You know, the one thing we know is they're incredibly gifted and talented. They have the stuff, if you will, to pitch in the major leagues. But every one of them has something that they need to improve on. If you want to go individually, you know, you look at a Brady Singer, you know, trying to come up with a third pitch that will be effective for him, so his slider does play better. We do like his fastball command. He commands the down and away pitch extremely well, but learning how to use that fastball to both sides of the plate. But when he has that third pitch, and there's been some nights where his changeup's been pretty good, he's very effective. You know, and then he has nights where he doesn't need his third pitch, and he's very good. So, but to be a quality starting pitcher, that's been a point of focus for us, and that message has been relayed to Brady. I think a guy like Chris Bubich, it's really just when he commands his fastball and his breaking ball is on, his changeup is always there. So it's just consistency with Chris. You look at a guy like Daniel Lynch, I think he's still very much in that phase of experience. He needs to just continue to get out there and pitch. He's got really four quality pitches. He uses the slider more than he does the curveball, but he does have a curveball. But he's got a really good changeup. So, and he pitches to the inside part of the plate really well, and he has a lot of confidence in his fastball to go the inside part of the plate, which sets up most of his off-speed pitches, which are going to be away from the right-handed hitter. A guy like Jackson Coar, it really comes down to if he commands his fastball. He's got a good enough breaking ball. He's got an outstanding changeup. When he commands his fastball consistently and can throw a fastball in any count and locate it, he's going to be extremely effective. So, Carlos Hernandez, right now, I don't want to say he doesn't have anything to work on, but needs to just continue on the path that he's been on because he was really, really impressive as we closed out the season. Look at some of the younger guys. We got a quick look at Jonathan Heasley. The thing that he does so well is he does command all three of his pitches, fastball, curveball, changeup. Interestingly enough, he did throw a slider one time, or really throughout his career, but about halfway through this past summer, we decided let's just go curveball, and his performance really took a step in the right direction. I think eventually, he'll break out that slider again, but right now he commands his curveball so well, and he's got a changeup he's got a lot of confidence in, and he commands his fastball that's why we saw a very effective starting pitcher for the couple starts he got. And the quick look at Angel Zerpa, I mean, he's always been able to do this, and it's rare for a left-handed pitcher to be able to pitch in on a right-handed hitter with real consistent effect. He did that extremely well, but he's so young into his career. I don't really know what to say, what he needs to improve on just yet. Yeah. But he got the experience. Then he just, Mike Miner's a seasoned veteran, knows how to pitch. He pitches up in the zone well, but the reason he's able to elevate is because he can locate down. And when you're able to locate down and then go up, that high spin rate fastball that's going to, get by hitters plays much better. He does that really well. And I think his role for us is to be a veteran leader, help younger pitchers learn and get through those growing pains faster because he went through it as a pitcher. And Brad Keller, very similar, not quite as many years as Mike Miner, but in our rotation, he's done a really effective job. He's pitch efficient. I think maybe some of the troubles he got into this year was, trying to chase that swing and miss a little bit too much early and you fall behind in the count. And no matter how good your stuff is, it's hard to pitch when you're behind in the count. Made some adjustments throughout the year and was much better as we closed the season, prior to his season-ending injury. But we're in good shape, and I think we really have to focus through the offseason, communicate with these guys, make sure that, the test that we've left them with at the end of the season, they're focused on it, they're working at it. So when we get to spring training, we see the results of hard work through the offseason.
Royals General Manager J.J. Piccolo joining us here on 610 Sports Radio. And even though you and the rest of this front office taught everyone in Kansas City the importance of a bullpen in those pennant-winning seasons of 2014 and 15, and we've all watched it over the past decade unfold each and every October, I got to admit I'm somewhat surprised that you started this conversation focusing on the bullpen, because Staumont to Barlow, Tapia and Piamps, what we saw from Coleman, what we saw from Brents, not to mention all of the young starting pitchers. And I've heard it said relievers often are failed starters. It seems as if that relief corps is one of, if not the strength, along with the defense and the base running of this ball club. What is it about the never-ending search for relievers that has that at the top of the to-do list?
Well, one of the things that's going to come into effect, or at least we believe it will, and it was supposed to be in effect in 21, is that every major league roster is going to be limited to 13 pitchers at one time. A little bit due to COVID, a little bit due to the expectation that there was going to be an increase in injuries for pitchers coming off a year where it was cut short. MLB relaxed those rules for 2021. So oftentimes we had 16 pitchers available on our team. out of 26 players. So next year, knowing that it's going to be 13 every night, or at least believing, and that's how we're going to operate through the offseason, knowing that it's going to be 13, we got to have viable options, for Mike Matheny to run the bullpen the way he needs to run the bullpen effectively. So you start looking at players that have options, so you have flexibility, players that might throw three or four innings in the major leagues and they're down for the next two or three days and we just played an extra inning game or whatever it may have been and we need a fresh arm. You need somebody in AAA that has options that can come up. But it's that middle ground. We feel really good about Barlow, Brents, and Stamont. There's a lot of power at the end of the bullpen. I don't know if we can say any one guy is the closer. They've all had a chance to close some games. But it's that group in between. Tapia and Pyant did a tremendous job for us. It was great to see Coleman come up and do what he did at the end of the year. Gabe Spire was really good in the 3 weeks he was up in September. There's certainly pieces for us. But then you do want some guys that have, weathered the storm before, a little bit more veteran presence, being able to throw back-to-back nights, throwing three out of four nights. That's a tough thing for young pitchers. And I think when we start looking at our own system, it's not necessarily the way we want to break guys into the major leagues. We certainly could, but if we had our druthers, we'd rather them be broken into the major leagues in a way that they can stay healthy, they get the experience, and with that experience, now you can start throwing more at them. So it's that, that middle group, that you'd like to have some others like Barlow, like Stamont, that can deepen our pen and give us more options, over the course of 162 games.
Can never have enough pitching, can never have enough catching, can never have enough talented center fielders, talented shortstops like this organization has. And instead of the generic Bobby, Nicky, Mondi question, spring training's going to play all that out. I understand it. But I'm curious, what do you want from that shortstop position in 2022, regardless the name?
Yeah, well, you want as much defense and range as you can possibly get. I mean, especially in the world of shifting the way we do, that pie up the middle, that ground you have to cover up the middle, you'd like to have somebody that has tremendous range. The three that you mentioned all can do that, and they're all pretty dynamic players. You just want consistency out of that position. I think they all bring something to the table offensively, but when we look at our club overall, how are we going to best be set up over 162 games to play the best possible defense? Because something that gets really overlooked, and you see it across the game, you certainly see it in the minor leagues a lot, pitching gets better when ground balls are converted into outs. And when you have young pitchers and they make good pitches and there's a ball that's hit a little bit to the right, you want the shortstop to have the range to be able to make that play and convert that to an out because there was a good pitch that was made that the pitcher deserves an out. And when those outs aren't converted, now the starting pitcher has to work harder. The likelihood of him getting through six or seven innings decreases. So you want as much range as you possibly can get. And I think you get that when you do have consistency in who's playing position. The shortstop position is not a position that you want a different guy there every night. You need to have a consistent guy. So when we go into spring training, we've been talking about those three guys for 5 months now. What's this going to look like in a year? Well, now that we're into the off season and we start planning, we'll go into spring training open-minded to, who should play shortstop every day. We know Nicky can play short. He can play second. We know Mondi can play short. He can play third. He hasn't played second, but we know that he can. And Bobby can play short and third really well. So there's great options for us. It's a good thing for us to have. And something we're pretty excited about.
JJ, to lump Adalberto Mondesi and Hunter Dozier together, I only do it because I think the honest, smart baseball fan in Kansas City knows the talent that Adalberto Mondesi possesses, knows the ability that Hunter Dozier possesses. But for someone like you that is putting this team together, building a team for 2022, How much is fair to put on their shoulders? How much of the offensive expectation is fair to put on the shoulders of these two that are either coming off down years or coming off an injury plague season?
So I think they both put a lot of, I'll say pressure, but I don't know if that's the right word. They put a lot of pressure on themselves because they know how important they are to us. I know it was extremely difficult for Mondi to not be available for us this year like he was most of the year. It's frustrating for him. He had a hard time dealing with that, and it's more because he's a great teammate, and he knows that we're a better team when he's on the field. Hunter, I think, put pressure on himself in that, you know, he signed the extension. Our purposes with signing him to an extension was to, you know, one, we valued the player, but two, you don't need to worry about your contract now. Just go out and play. But Hunter is such a good person and good teammate that he wanted to play up to that contract. So trying to get him to just understand that's not how you can operate day to day. You need to free yourself up and just go play the game like you did when you were 10 years old. And when you do that, you're going to have success and you won't even worry about the contract. But needless to say, both guys are really important to our offensive production. Hunter Dozier, we've seen in past years. We know what he's capable of doing. The times when you see Mondi really hot, it's amazing how much he can impact the game. You know, we talked about his defense, but whether it's, you know, swinging the bat, running the bases, I mean, he's one of the rare, you know, few guys in the game that can hit a ball 480 feet and steal 40 to 60 bases a year. I mean, there's just not many guys who can do that. So there's so much impact. But, you know, the obvious thing with Mondi is how do we keep him on the field and keep him healthy? How can we pace him through the season so we're not pushing him to his limits? You know, the thing we've learned about Mondi is he's so incredibly gifted. But being as athletic as he is, he's actually a little bit more prone to injury. The good thing but difficult thing for us to figure out is, all right, how do we prevent injuries with him? He doesn't have a history of any one injury. So that makes it difficult on our medical staff, our performance science team, to try to figure out how do we train him so we are preventing injuries regardless of what part of the body it may be. So, you know, it's a great challenge. I think we've put together a really good plan with he and his agent for this offseason that hopefully will lead us down that road and we keep him on the field. And along with Dozier, with a clear mind and a new start, they're able to go out and produce the way we know they're capable of producing.
This might be an unfair question, and I guess it kind of gets at the heart of any general manager or scout. When you're viewing Hunter Dozier on paper, projecting for 2022, same thing with Adalberto Mondesi. Is it the 2019 Hunter Dozier, Adalberto Mondesi, those type of numbers that you alluded to? Do you always view your players in the best possible light? How much of a dose of what happened last year do you have to take along with all of the good that they've showcased as well?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of players that have had years where they were down years, if you will. I think what, you know, Hunter needs to realize, what we know, is what he did in 2019 is very much what he's capable of doing. Mm-hmm. You know, he's done it at the major league level. You know, and really at the heart of it for both guys, you know, it all comes down to the same thing. Get a good pitch to hit, and when you get a good pitch to hit, you do something with it. You know, it sounds very simple, but in this world of advanced metrics and advanced technology, when you go back and you analyze at-bats, the productive at-bats are the ones where guys swung the good pitches and hit the ball hard somewhere. You really can't control the results. We can't control where guys are going to shift you or where they're going to play in the outfield. But if we can get the player to buy into controlling the strike zone and knowing what they hit well, and when they get those pitches, do some damage with them, then they're going to be productive players. So the 2019 version of Hunter Dozier, that's exactly what he did. You know, he took advantage of pitchers' mistakes, and that's what he did. When Mondesi is going really good, it's amazing. You know, if a pitcher makes one slight mistake, it's big damage with him. You know, it's balls in the gaps, which usually for him are triples or they're over the fence. But if the focus stays on get good pitches to hit, and look to drive those pitches and lay off the chase pitches, you know, they're going to be good hitters. And they've done it already, so they should have the confidence that, that they themselves can do it. And now it's a matter of executing it.
Two more questions pertaining to the offense. JJ, I appreciate the time. One, Andrew Benintendi. He hit second on that championship team in Boston. Last year, hit second, third, fourth, and fifth for your team, 20 starts at each of those four spots in the lineup. Where do you think he fits best? Or I guess that's a manager's job. What kind of hitter? What type of hitter do you view him as moving forward?
Well, for one, fundamentally, his swing is excellent. I mean, there's a lot of balance in his lower half. He gets, you know, his bat stays in his zone a long time, which is why he comes off his bat so well. But it seems to me, just watching him over the course of the year, when he's really driving the balls left center field, that's when he's at his best. Mm-hmm. And you see some surprisingly big power out of him. But I don't think he's one of those guys who gets himself into trouble trying to produce power. I really think his mindset is, I'm going to hit the ball hard. But his swing path is one that, if he's on time and he delivers the barrel at the right time and the contact zone's good, the ball's going to jump for him. The ball's going to be in the air. And, you know, years ago, I know as a kid growing up, everybody would say, hit the ball on the ground. And, you know, there's more holes on the ground than in the air. But obviously today's game, and I don't think the game was much different years ago. I think there's just more knowledge about where the holes really are. So you do want to see the ball in the air. It's just not soft in the air. You want low line drives, long line drives, and if you catch it right, they're the ones that are going to go out of the ballpark. Well, Andrew does that really well. So when he's going good, and I really thought this past year he was about to just really take off. He was playing well, and he got hurt in Oakland, and I think that set him back. Then he started going again in September. I think that injury in between disrupted some things. Like most great players, they want to get back on the field sooner, and it wasn't until, you know, the middle part of September that I think he was feeling 100% and going. But his offensive potential is excellent. You know, I'll leave it to Mike where to hit him in the lineup, and I think, as you see with most teams now, the changing of lineups and who hits where, it's no longer your fastest guy is going to hit lead off and your left-handed hitter is going to hit two. I mean, that's in the past. The creativity in lineups has a lot to do with the advanced metrics and matchups and what we think gives us the best chance to win night to night. So I think, again, you'll see him hit anywhere from 2 to 6. I think that would probably, if we're talking again next year about the same thing, it probably he's going to hit anywhere from 2 to 6. Yeah. Once again in 22.
Yeah, and in no way am I trying to go down a lineup avenue, because, like you said, it's often wasted breath when it comes to media and radio discussing the lineup. My point more so was, look, we know Salvi is in the middle of the lineup. That is a run producer. Curious if you viewed Benintendi as not Salvador Perez 40 home, but a run producer, middle of the lineup guy on a daily basis.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. You know, we categorize our guys as run producers and run scorers. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say Andrew's a run scorer, but you also know there's some slug in there. So I think he can be at times that guy that's going to hit behind Salvi to protect Salvi. You know, oftentimes you got to set your lineup up like that. It has to do with who's swinging the bat well at what times. But you're always going to want somebody behind Salvi because they're probably going to pitch around him. They're going to try to get him to chase things, soft contact. So, but who hits behind him is going to be very impactful if he's going to have any chance of getting pitches to hit. Yeah. So, you know, I would venture to say he is a little bit more along the lines of a run producer than necessarily a run scorer, if I had to pick one of the two. So I think he's perfectly capable of doing that.
Royals GM J.J. Piccolo. J.J., final one for you, staying with the offense. OPS-wise, bottom three in the American League last year, and you know, not a young offense per se, but it could be with the additions of Prado, Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez in the coming months or years. Do you view these bats, these young bats, as that type of difference-making bats that can jump you to the top third in the American League when it comes to that OPS number?
We do believe that. We think the three you mentioned are three of the most talented guys in the minor leagues. They were all named first team All Baseball America, which really, that was an all-star team from AAA down to A-ball. So I think the industry views them very much in that light. We all know young hitters, it's not going to be instant or instantaneous that they're going to be the same hitter in the major leagues as they were in the minor leagues. But just going off of past experiences, they all get on base. They all have a high OPS. Usually that's going to translate when guys get to the major league. It's just a matter of how long is that transition. You know, obviously there's some superstars that do it right away. But a majority of the players, it takes a little bit to get settled in. But when they get settled in, we don't have any doubt. I mean, you're talking about guys that will be in the middle of our lineup. You know, when they're in their prime, when they hit their stride, they are guys that can do some damage. Even though MJ led the minor leagues in home runs, I'm not ready to say we want him to be a home run hitter. We all know how hard it is to hit balls out of Kauffman Stadium. We want him to be a good hitter. If he's a good hitter, he's going to hit some home runs. Nick Prado's the same way. Bobby Witt Jr. is the same. You know, we've got Vinny Pasquantino, who was in Double A this year, who was a second team All Baseball America selection, that has incredible plate discipline, walks. You know, I believe the stat was he had as many walks as he did extra base hits this year. So, pretty impressive stat. We're excited about that group. We do think that's the future that's going to be in the middle of our lineup, and we're just anxious for those days to get here.
Prado, Bobby, MJ, would it be fair to call them central to your 2022 plans, or am I a year premature on that?
I wouldn't say year premature. I would be disappointed, again, if we were talking this time next year, that they hadn't made their major league debuts. And I say that because we don't want to put pressure on them to feel like they need to be in the major leagues. We like to say players will tell us when they're ready, and that's basically by performance. You know, oftentimes if guys repeat a level, you watch how they go back and they handle the league they were just in, and they're dominating the league. Very similar to what we did with Eric Hosmer. Eric Hosmer went to AAA, and he was actually making the jump from AA to AAA. I forget what his numbers exactly were, but he was hitting around 400. The slug was high. The on-base was high. He was telling us he was ready for the major leagues. You know, a couple of those guys, if not all three, may have to go through the same process, but that's, you know, kind of the beauty of spring training. We get to have those discussions. We get to evaluate our team. And like every player, they have to be prepared, and then there has to be an opportunity for them to play every day. Because the last thing we would want is a young player to be in the major leagues and not playing every day, because you're losing out on development time, which, as much as we want to think guys are ready for the major league, there is a piece of development that has to happen while in the major leagues as well. So we wouldn't want that to be on the bench. So there has to be that opportunity for them as well. But a lot of that is determined by performance in spring training, and along with and heavily influenced by past performance. You know, we can't base everything on a 4-week jaunt through Surprise Arizona. But we have a pretty good feel for where they are in the development process. We'll continue that evaluation and see where it comes out. But, you know, the expectation is at some point next year, we'd like to see all three of them in the major leagues. If it doesn't happen in 22, it doesn't mean they're not good players. It may be 23, but we'll know when the time is right for each of them.
Well, I can't wait. I can't wait to get this thing started. JJ, we always appreciate your generosity with your time here at 610 Sports Radio. Tonight, no exception. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vern. Appreciate the time.
Royals General Manager JJ Piccolo. Royals shortstop, second baseman, let's just say Royals infielder Nicky Lopez is next.
You're listening to Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Right center field, and that ball is gone!
On your home for Royals baseball.
Salvador Perez, a grand slam for a second straight game.
610 Sports Radio. Welcome back into Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Lined into right center field for a hit. Merrifield's going to try to score. A good throw home could get him. Then the throw is not in time.
Here's your Royals insider, Josh Vernier.
Hey, welcome back. As promised, Royals infielder Nicky Lopez is our guest. And Nicky, I'll tell you this. The two questions I get most often, grocery store, around the building here at 610 Sports Radio, the two questions, number one, what's going on with the Chiefs? And number two, what's up with these Gold Glove awards? How was Nicky Lopez not even a finalist for the American League shortstop Gold Glove? Do you have an answer for either one of those questions?
I know the Chiefs are going to be all right. That's what I know. anyone in professional sports know that you go through your ups and downs, and any fan, any true fan will ride with them whether they're winning or losing. But I know the Chiefs are going to be all right. As far as the Gold Glove question, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know. Like, I feel like personally, I did a lot to be able to be in the top three. I think I put myself in the right position. I thought I did. You know, my stats were good. You know, all that stuff. I led in a lot of categories, but it's just one of those things where it was kind of a shocking. You know, I didn't know if I was going to win it, but I thought I did well enough to be in the top three. And you know, unfortunately, my name wasn't up there. But you know, now we just got to turn the page. We got more things to worry about. I want to not watch teams in October. I want to be playing in October. So, you know, kind of flip the switch and, you know, look forward to that.
Look, as someone that watched every single game that you played this season, I, as well as along with everybody listening, believe that you belonged in that top three. You're not allowing that to make you second guess the kind of defense that you played, though, right?
No, right. Yeah. But it is sometimes tough. It's like, all right, well, what did I do wrong? It's a Gold Glove. It's based off of defense. And, you know, if you look at statistics-wise, you know, I was up there in every category, you know, except probably, like, I think one category. But it was one of those things. It's like, all right, well, you know, those can kind of creep in your mind. But I know that starting at second base and then having to go to, you know, shortstop due to an unfortunate injury and then doing or having a season that I did, you know, I was actually very, you know, happy for myself and very, very proud of myself. Obviously, I'm a team first guy and would like to be in the playoffs and would like to be still playing in October. But it's one of those things is you gotta celebrate individual successes when they happen as well. And I was very happy with the season I had.
So who did you hear from? Front office, coaches, teammates? Who's reaching out to you?
Basically, all the above. You know, it says a lot about, you know, the type of teammates and the type of organization I play for. I got a call from, you know, Dayton, text from Scott, my coaches, Skip, Vance, Witt reached out, and Benny, and a couple other guys as well. So it's cool to see that they do truly, you know, care for me. So, but it says a lot about the team and the organization I play for.
Man, and when that news came out, And I shouldn't feel like this, but there was a part of me, man, where I'm hoping that it's not getting Nicky Lopez down because, man, 300 batting average, Gold Glove caliber shortstop, and statistically one of the best base runners in Major League Baseball. I said throughout the season, when I grew up, and I'm just a little bit older than you, but when we grew up, a 300 batting average, Gold Glove defense, and the best base runner in the American League, that guy's a perennial all-star. So I'm wondering, when you show up to spring training this year, how are you different from the guy that showed up last year?
So the thing is, and then I've always said this in a lot of, you know, interviews, is that once you see success, for instance, when I saw success in the minor leagues, I know I can do it. It keeps your confidence up. It's one of those things that when you go through struggles, because baseball, I mean, is a game of failure. So when you go through struggles, you kind of look back and like, all right, well, I've been here. I've had the success. I know I can do it. So going into spring training next year, it's one of those things where it's where I'm going to, you know, carry some confidence into spring training, know that I belong here and I can compete at the highest level here and, you know, put a good product out there and I can help a team win. But it's also one of those things that's, you know, you don't come into spring training thinking, you know, I deserve this, I deserve that. It's one of those things you got to come in, and you got to just get to work, and you got to not take anything for granted.
And man, that leads me into this, as I laid out the numbers defensively, the numbers on the base paths, and of course the offensive numbers, all stand out. But what's so endlessly brutal about this game, as you called it, a game of failure, is, hey, great job last year, but on game one next year, it's do it again.
Right.
That's just a brutal game. Does that sound?
I wish it wasn't like that, but it makes the game fun, and I wish we can carry stats over to next year and just keep it going. But that's the beauty of the game. It's you can have an MVP season one year, and then the next year you can struggle, and it's unfortunate, but it's how you bounce back. So
where do you see the most room for improvement? As I would imagine, we're maybe a month and a half away from you really getting back at it.
Yeah. So no, I started last week fully back at it. I'll start swinging and throwing here around Thanksgiving time. But as far as room for improvement, there always is room for improvement, whether it's on the hitting side, defensive side, and the base pass. So it's one of those things is I gotta just kind of look back and see, all right, where can I get better? Where can I improve on? But also, where can I just like fine tune some things and kind of put a stamp on it and keep just drilling into it so that it doesn't go away. And the best thing though this year was the mental aspect. If you have a clear mind and you have a clear outlook at things, when I was struggling, when I went on that long skid of 1-for-31, the thing that helped me was when I got sent down beginning of the season, I had to clean my mind. I had to think positively and know that when you do go through struggles, if you have a routine, which I was fortunate enough to make, and I had a routine, a strong routine, and when I got sent down and when I went through those struggles for 1-for-31, I stuck with it, stayed positive, knew that, hey, if you stick with this stuff, it's eventually going to turn. And that's one of those things that I think a year ago I would have got really negative, but this year I just stayed put, and kept going right at it.
And that lesson that you learned, it seems as if that is one that all successful big leaguers go through at some point in their career. So with that kind of knowledge going into 2022, do you expect your role inside the clubhouse, your voice inside the clubhouse, to change, to get any louder?
So I'm I'm already a loud guy. I like talking. I'm always there for – I'm a team-first guy, but maybe. I mean, I know it's, Sal and Witt, the two voices are loud in the locker room whenever they talk. They lead the meetings and stuff like that. But, I'm always there to be in a leadership role. I would like to, take a leadership role, whatever that may be. But I know – it's one of those things that you can't force it, and it's one of those things that's like when it's your time, it's just going to naturally happen. But my teammates know that I'm there for support, there to talk with about anything, and we'll always have their back. So, but it's one of those things that just genuinely happens.
You and I have talked about the shortstop competition next spring a few times already over the course of the season. With that knowledge that you've gained over the past few seasons, with that voice that you have in that clubhouse, the confidence that you carry, I'm curious, will there be disappointment if you're not the guy at short to start 2022?
I wouldn't say I would be disappointed, because I think the world of this organization, they trusted me this last year and kept me at shortstop and said, hey, we're gonna have you play shortstop the rest of the year. Go play, and that meant the world to me. It gave me the confidence. But if I'm not shortstop to start next year, then I know that they're going to put me in a position where I'm going to succeed. And whether that's playing second base, whether that's playing third base, whether that's going to playing in the outfield, wherever it may be. But I know that they're going to put me somewhere else where I'll play, and then I'll be able to help the team win at that position. So whether it's short, whether it's second, whether it's anywhere else on the diamond, as long as I'm playing, you're not going to hear too much out of me.
Can you expand on that conversation from last season because it was very clear that Dayton, Mike Matheny, sat down with Adalberto Mondesi and said, look, Nicky's going to win a gold glove. We love you, Mondy, but we got to let this young man go get this hardware. Mondy accepted it. The organization prioritized. And look, you earned it, first and foremost. You earned that spot at shortstop and Mondy moving over to third, but what was that like when everything was revolving around your Fantastic play.
Yeah, it was, you know, yeah, they called me in. They sat me down. They were very nice about it. Because at that point, they thought I had a really good shot of winning, you know, the Gold Glove. And they said that, hey, you played short this whole year. We're gonna keep you there and see what happens. And, you know, that meant the world to me. And I'm the type of kid that if I'm confident, and I think any baseball player would say this, is that confidence is one of the biggest things you can have. So if you're playing with confidence, it's one of the things where everything seems to be clicking. And at that point, when they told me that, hey, you're gonna be starting shortstop the rest of the year, my confidence was through the roof, and kind of just went off from there. And it meant so much to me. And do I think that our team is better with Mondy on the field? Obviously, because you know Mondy knows that I think the world of him, and I know the front office does too. But it did mean a lot to me and my confidence.
Well, that's terrific, Nicky. I really appreciate the time tonight. Thank you very much. Enjoy the off season, and I'll see you in spring training before you know it.
Awesome. Thank you, Vern. Sounds good. I'll see you when we get in town.
All right, man. That's Nicky Lopez. We'll be joined by the man that signs Nicky Lopez's paycheck, Royals Chairman, CEO John Sherman, coming up next.
You're listening to Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Slider is lifted to shallow center and back to make a great catch, Nicky Lopez.
On your home for Royals baseball, 610 Sports Radio. Welcome back in to Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Power fastball. Santana gets into one left center field. That ball's going back, and that ball is gone! Home run, Carlos Santana, to tie the game at 3.
Here's your Royals insider, Josh Vernier.
That's an interesting name right there, Carlos Santana, a guy that we will all cheer if he's still in a Royals uniform on opening day, a guy that we're all going to cheer for on opening day, and yet, how many of you, 90% of you listening right now would, in the back of your minds, much rather see Nick Prado as your first baseman sooner rather than later? Well, we heard from J.J. Piccolo to open up the show when talking about these young first basemen like a Nick Prado, young infielder like Bobby Witt Jr., a young catcher like M.J. Melendez. Yeah, this organization does view those three bats as the difference-making type of sluggers that can take this Royals offense from the bottom three in the American League to the top third in the junior circuit. Still ahead, Ryan Lefever, Whit Merrifield, Dayton Moore, and owner John Sherman. But a quick reminder for those of you on your way home, if you're going to miss the rest of tonight's Bonanza, don't worry. Just download the Odyssey app. Find Vern on Baseball, that's my podcast, on the Odyssey app, and you'll be able to find all of our interviews. If you missed J.J. Piccolo or Nicky Lopez, they'll be on the Odyssey app shortly. We'll talk with John Sherman, Ryan Lefever, Dayton Moore, and Whit Merrifield, and later on tonight, you'll be able to find all those interviews on the Odyssey app as well. Well, I mentioned M.J. Melendez. A quick congratulations to the 22-year-old backstop for your boys in blue, or soon to be for your boys in blue. MJ Melendez voted the top offensive player in minor league baseball earlier today. That is voted on by the fans. Melendez received 33% of the vote. Bobby Witt Jr. finished with 20% of the vote. Now, this wasn't the best offensive player in Omaha. No, this was the best offensive player in minor league baseball. And yes, more than half the votes went to two members of this Royals organization. MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt Jr. will dive into all of it coming up with Dayton Moore when he joins us at 8:50. But when we get back, the owner, chairman, and CEO, John Sherman, stops by.
You're listening to Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Right center field, and that ball is gone!
On your home for Royals baseball.
Salvador Perez, a grand slam for a second straight game.
610 Sports Radio. Welcome back in to Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Power fastball. Santana gets into one left center field. That ball's going back, and that ball is gone! home run Carlos Santana to tie the game at three.
Here's your Royals insider, Josh Vernier.
That's an interesting name right there, Carlos Santana, a guy that we will all cheer if he's still in a Royals uniform on opening day, a guy that we're all going to cheer for on opening day, and yet... How many of you, 90% of you listening right now would, in the back of your minds, much rather see Nick Prado as your first baseman sooner rather than later? Well, we heard from J.J. Piccolo to open up the show when talking about these young first basemen like a Nick Prado, young infielder like Bobby Witt Jr., a young catcher like M.J. Melendez. Yeah, this organization does view those three bats as the difference-making type of sluggers that can take this Royals offense from the bottom three in the American League to the top third in the junior circuit. Still ahead, Ryan LaFever, Whit Merrifield, Dayton Moore, and owner John Sherman. But a quick reminder for those of you on your way home, if you're going to miss the rest of tonight's bonanza, don't worry. Just download the Odyssey app. Find Vern on Baseball, that's my podcast, on the Odyssey app, and you'll be able to find all of our interviews. If you missed J.J. Piccolo or Nicky Lopez, they'll be on the Odyssey app shortly. We'll talk with John Sherman, Ryan LaFever, Dayton Moore, and Whit Merrifield, and later on tonight, you'll be able to find all those interviews on the Odyssey app as well. Well, I mentioned M.J. Melendez. A quick congratulations to the 22-year-old backstop for your boys in blue, or soon to be for your boys in blue. M.J. Melendez voted the top offensive player in minor league baseball earlier today. That is voted on by the fans. Melendez received 33% of the vote. Bobby Witt Jr. finished with 20% of the vote. Now, this wasn't the best offensive player in Omaha. No, this was the best offensive player in minor league baseball. And yes, more than half the votes went to two members of this Royals organization. M.J. Melendez, Bobby Witt Jr. will dive into all of it coming up with Dayton Moore when he joins us at 8:50. But when we get back, the owner, chairman, and CEO, John Sherman, stops by.
You're listening to Vern's Royals Bonanza.
Right center field, and that ball is gone!
On your home for Royals baseball.
Salvador Perez, a grand slam for a second straight game.
610 Sports Radio.